Well, good evening. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. We've got three of the four casting characters here. We've got Larry and Captain Kirk. How are you, fellas?
Hey.
I'm great, man. I'm great.
You obviously haven't been paying any attention to the news. Either that or you don't care.
Yeah,
don't care.
It's laughable. You know, when you said that, I just watched something. Yeah, you know, Trump said something about him thinking that Putin was a stronger leader than Obama. Something I completely agree with, by the way.
Yeah.
They're both evil. That's
they're
not
both
the
evil.
Point.
Yeah, they're both evil.
Yeah, but is he a stronger leader?
There was a period of time where Putin, I think, was the best leader in the world. And he has he's gone off and done some. And that was about the time of the and right after the Moscow, the Sochi Olympics. And then shortly after that, having nothing to do with Ukraine, but having a lot to do with his position on the so-called Palestinians and Syria and Muslims in general, he said some really stupid stuff. But that said, you're right. Putin is
a
leader.
Here's the hypocrisy of it. Right after they attack him, they send John Kerry out to do some business with him to make a deal with the Russians. Which is exactly what Trump was saying. He goes, well, he likes me, I like him. We'd sit down and talk and see if we can't find some common ground to defeat ISIS. what he said, and then they attacked him for it. It's just unreal. To me. If I were his campaign manager, Trump would be ahead. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, of course.
I mean, that's
of course.
The truth.
Yeah, of course.
He'd be ahead.
Yeah, what's amazing here is two things. One is that the Islamic State cannot be defeated. I was going to do a yeoman job on the Islamic State. But apart from
we all know that.
The Islamic State cannot be defeated. The thing that is so interesting about all of this is that you really have a situation where all the media wants to criticize Trump for saying today on a Russian radio or television station, I forgot which one it is. I think it's a Russian.
It was on Larry King's podcast, which happened to be on Russian TV.
And so he was criticizing American policy in Iraq, and then everybody's having a fit. You know, why would you criticize American policy in Iraq on Russian?
Because it's wrong.
Well, do you think that there's anybody in Russia, much less anybody in the world, other than those blinded by American flag-waving patriotism and militarism, that don't realize that everything we did in Iraq was wrong? Everything. I mean, we didn't do anything right in Iraq. We did. In fact, it's not just we didn't do anything right. Everything we did was disastrous.
That's why Obama and Petraeus did that. Those were the two people that did that.
Well, Petraeus, Bush, Bush 1, Bush 2, Petraeus,
Obama.
Colin Powell, I mean, Condoleezza Rice. I mean, you got a lot of people to blame. Dick Cheney, the list is long. But
well, the people that went in there, you're saying, but the people that also decided they were going to exercise the war the way they did it also created a vacuum, which created ISIS, and you have to hand that to Obama. I mean,
I can't stand Obama, but one thing that he doesn't...
He was part of it.
Not on Iraq. He has a lot to blame on engaging in a war that destroyed Libya and created hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of refugees. He is 100% to blame for that. He is 100% to blame for the resulting American engagement in Syria, which has been and will continue to be. In fact, it may even be America's undoing if you look at Yashaya 17 and 18. It might be the final straw. So he has ample blame. But the mistakes in Iraq were all King George I, King George II, and their cast of characters invading based upon a lie and then continuing to bludgeon our way to utter and complete disaster.
Don't get me wrong here. I am not standing up for Bush or Cheney or Colin Powell or Condoleezza Rice, none of those people. They're animals. They're monsters.
The fact of the matter is that the void we created in Iraq was not created by American troops leaving. It was created by American troops entering, because what we did is we removed the secular dictator.
Once we removed the secular dictator
and then decided to build an army for the Shiites as they were being led from Tehran, we created a civil war in that country, and then Petraeus came up with a brilliant idea. Why don't we arm the Sunni warlords, and then they can keep the Shia military that we have built at bay, and we'll have a neutral, we'll have what we call mutual assured destruction, a standoff, and that standoff turned into the Islamic State and the war in Syria.
Well, the only thing, it's pretty rough. Here's what I would say. If you're a businessman, and that's what your primary concern is, you're not in briefings, you're not in this, you're not in that, and you're on Howard Stern's show one day, and you go, yeah, sure, why not go in? And, you know, you go on about talking whatever it is you're talking about. But on record, you say, I'm against the Iraqi war, and you say this in magazines. It's a little hard to pin him down with it. Now, I will say this, too. If you are the Secretary of State, and you don't even know what a, what a confidential email looks like, and you accidentally happen to bleach, you know, all your emails and use private servers, and you have and you lie everywhere you go. What I would tell the American public is that voting is a joke. You might as well forget about it. The very fact they've got us talking about this as opposed to the fact they're going to get rid of all coal and all your electric bills are going to go up and they're going to continue to tax you into oblivion, which is what you really ought to be concerned about. None of those things are even front and center.
No, nor is our $20 trillion deficits, nor is the disaster we've made in the Middle East. Nothing that matters, nor is the absolute disgrace in terms of the destruction of Americans' ability to think vis-a-vis our political correctness, nor the building up of our military and the use of our military, where they're squandering trillions of dollars making bad situations worse, nor is either the belligerence of the police. You know, it's turned into a racial issue as opposed to police
as opposed to a police issue.
Right. You know, it's a militarism of the police is the issue, and yet it's turned into a meaningless racial issue. So you got the Kaepernicker taking a knee. I haven't done the national anthem for a long time, but I won't make a spectacle of it. I just walk out of the stadium or walk out of that of my seat so that I don't get harassed for doing it. But I never stand for the national anthem. But I don't do it for lots of reasons, none of which have to do with police unfairly singling out African Americans and killing them, because that isn't a viable issue.
Right. Well, I mean, and the last thing I want to say on this political front, because I watched 10 minutes and picked this up. One of the big things that's going on is, as you know, in these battleground states, is one of them is North Carolina. And Hillary Clinton came out full force against Pat McCrory, who's the governor over there, because he signed a law saying that, if you were a man at birth, you're going to use the man's bathroom. In other words, this transgender bathroom.
Yeah, you think what
happened
in Minnesota?
With him.
There's about 10 families of girls. Little girls, you know, grammar school girls, were going into the girls' bathroom, and there was a transgender boy in there. What was the term that was used? It was like
twerking.
I don't know what twerking. I don't know what twerking.
I don't know what twerking is.
But he was in there. He was in there twerking himself and
twerking.
Yeah, twerking himself.
Yeah, I get the idea.
He's a man confused, thinking he's a girl, in the boys' bathroom, but. And he was twerking himself. And so there are 10 parents are suing the school district because they created gender ambivalent. It's the inability to discern. You can't tell if you're a boy or a girl, so it's okay. You can be whatever you want. Right and wrong, no matter. You can have whatever, you can believe whatever you want.
No, but they actually said that this could turn the election, the bathroom issue, because Hillary was giving a speech. That's what I saw. She said people are turning away from your state because of your bigotry. So
no,
now,
they are, by the way,
they
are.
Girl.
They, like the NBA said, we're not going to have our All-Star game there. Who was it? Russell Wilson, the super religious quarterback, was planning on getting buried there, but wouldn't go there because he said, "I think Jesus loves everybody, and therefore I want to go to
the transgender."
Yeah, his Jesus loves everybody, and therefore he was standing up for his Jesus by not getting married in North Carolina. Yeah.
Well, that's
over transgender bathrooms.
This is a football guy, is he?
Yeah, this is a
football quarterback, you know.
Third or fourth best quarterback in the NFL. Super, super religious.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, he has got his Christianity up to his nostrils.
Twerking. I'm seeing a picture of twerking. Lisa just sent it to me. It's a person shaking their ass is what it amounts to.
Oh, that's what a twerk is? Okay. All right.
Yeah, have you ever seen these dancers?
Yeah, that's one thing boys and girls both have. So, I guess if you're transgender, you know, I guess one looks pretty much like the other. But so that's twerking, huh?
Yep. Wow.
That's somebody knows what it
they
is.
They got YouTube videos showing you how to twerk.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking at one. It's amazing. If you want to be a complete idiot, then there's your answer right there.
Speaking of complete idiots, Captain Kirk was the one that came up with that. No, Captain Kirk, Doctor's a complete idiot. He was the one that came up with this brilliant insight into Yahshua 1:17 today. And we're going to let him present that. But I thought first I would read a pretty standard translation from your English Babel on Isaiah 1:17. It says, first,
okay.
Learn to do good. Learn to do good. I'm pretty sure the word tob isn't in the sentence, and that's the Hebrew word.
I don't see it.
And the Hebrew word for do, asha. So you've got, I don't see asha in the sentence, and I don't see tob. So it can't say learn to do good. And the next one is seek justice. Seek justice. Now, asha does not, where darash means to seek, mishpat is the basis of our salvation. It isn't, we aren't involved as judges or to judge. We're supposed to execute good judgment, but mishpat is the means that Yahweh uses to resolve our disputes. The next one is help the oppressed. Help the oppressed. Now, this one happens to be shafat, which is actually the Hebrew word for judge. And then yotham is the Hebrew word. It means fatherless child. The next one is defend the cause of orphans. I'm pretty sure that's not the word. And then it says fight for the rights of widows. Fight. So they came up with a clever twist.
Yeah, they made it sound like Yahweh was doing a social commentary.
Yeah, because most of the translations want you to support or uplift or care for
widows and
widows, and the Hebrew word is rib, which means to quarrel with, to contend with, to show hostility to. So let me read the passage as the words actually are written, and then we'll have Captain Kirk give his insight. It begins Lamad. Lamad is, and it's written in the imperative, so you have to convey the fact that this is conveying volition. And it's volition of the second person, so it's the volition of the person listening. So desire learning. So rather than learn to do good, the imperative makes it desire learning. Then it says, desire learning to be right, to be better, and to prosper. It's yathab. Yathab means desire learning to be successful, to do well, to engage effectively, to be productive, to be pleasing, to be agreeable, happy, and prosperous. I'm pretty sure that the Hebrew word for good is tov.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Yep.
Yatav is not tov. So that's the first one, desire learning to be right, to be better, and to prosper. Desire learning to engage effectively. Desire learning to be productive and successful. Now, God's really about that sort of thing. You look at Dode. I mean, Dode was very productive. You look at Moshe. Moshe was productive. In fact, he was so productive, people around said, "Man, you're wearing yourself out." And Moshe said, "Hey, no big deal. I'm happy to do it." You know, being productive is something God likes. The next one is seek, which is darash. Actually choose to inquire about and study, genuinely consult and investigate, petition and ponder, as a result, flourish, grow by choosing. Once again, imperative, mood, active stem, call stem. Call stem means literally, genuinely. Imperative mood, second person volition. So seek of your own volition the means to justly resolve disputes, mishpat. By the way, I saw mishpat today. Earlier today I was translating Yeshayah 53, which is about the sacrificial lamb taking on taking as a burden the sins of the of our sins, so that we would be exonerated. In the middle of that, as God's explaining what he is doing by this ransom, by this intercession, by him accepting our burdens to leave us tzedak, righteous and right, he slides in mishpat and says, "No, this is all about the mishpat. This is all about coming up with the means to resolve the disputes between us." So it's seek the means to justly resolve disputes, the mishpat. Live an upright life, electing to walk the right way, serving as a guide, Ashar. And Ashar is written the same way, by the way, as Asher, which is the word that speaks of the beneficial relationship and the means to approach by the correct way, an upright life. So live an upright life, electing to walk the right way, serving as a guide, Ashar. For all of those who are oppressed by human institutions, Chamotes, for everyone without status, cruelly subjugated by the political and religious establishment, including those who are, this is Chamotes, leavened, embittered, and soured. So the people, you want to live an upright life, electing to walk the right way, serving as a guide for the religious, for the oppressed, for those people who are abused by government and by religious institutions.
And by religion.
Yeah. Now, the next one is really interesting. It's Shaphat. Shaphat is the word, you know, when Yahweh speaks about his judges, those who will make decisions based upon if two people have a dispute, they'll look at how that dispute can be resolved by the principles of the Torah and help people out with their disagreements. Or if somebody just has a question on the Torah, they're the answer men. You go and you say, "I don't understand this about the Torah," and the Shaphat, it's their job to resolve people's questions. That is a Shaphat. So be judgmental, choosing of your own volition to plead on behalf of, choose to adjudicate by making and promoting informed, reasonable, and rational conclusions, which lead to the vindication and exercising good judgment by arguing on behalf of, again, imperative, which means it's your choice, the fatherless child, yathom, the orphan whose father is dead, but who has a widowed or divorced mother, a class of individuals deprived of appropriate resources from an unused root meaning to be lonely. And from Yathor, those who are searching and exploring, seeking to find credible information. That's the fatherless child. That's somebody that's not part of the covenant, by the way. This next one is Rib, and that's the one that that everybody has a tough time with because they are wont to translate Almana as the widow, and it's in, of course, it's quarrel with. So here the Nilf came up with fight for. the rights. And that's not what it says. It says quarrel with, choose to contend with, bring in a legal argument against, showing hostility in willful opposition to, filing a complaint against, using your words to plead in opposition to, even taunting, insulting, mocking, and ridiculing. So there, if you translate rib by any of its top 20 definitions, you can't put widow next. So now you got to look at what does almana mean. And this was my definition, and Kirk, you had a chance to check on it. I wrote, the congregation of the bound, in other words, the religious, the dumb, the unthinking, and silent, and who are silenced, you know, by political and religious
compulsion,
that'll do it to you. Crucifixion does a nice job of that.
Mm-hmm.
And forsaken. It's almana, the silent and silenced, who are unable to speak, those who have joined and are now bound to a religion. The widow, whose spouse has died and by extension is in a state of abandonment, the prolonged and feminine of al-am, and al-am is the bereaved, worshiping congregation of the silenced and dumb who are bound. And I just wrote a note that religion is from the Latin legare, to join and to bind. And the forsaken, the stronghold of political and military power and the structures within a society at the center of governmental authority, the estranged and separated, those who have been silenced by religion. So there's five thoughts of it. God's saying there's five things that I want you to choose to do. They're all of your own volition, but the first one, desire learning to be right, to do better, and to prosper. The second one, seek the means to justly resolve disputes. The third one, live an upright life, electing to walk the right way, serving as a guide for those who are oppressed by human institutions. The fourth one, be judgmental, choosing of your own volition to plead on behalf of the fatherless child. Five, quarrel with, choose to contend with, the congregation of the bound, dumb, and forsaken.
Well,
what do you think about
can
that?
Can I throw some in here, too?
Sure.
When you,
uh-huh.
you look at the Yathor there, where he's also discussing about people who are actually looking for credible information and looking for the truth. I mean, that's important that we're not just out there stupidly defending every idiot in the world. We're actually trying to present information to people who are looking for the truth. I mean,
yeah,
that's
actually,
what it is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is the, if someone who does not know Yahweh, is not part of the covenant, does not have a, their Heavenly Father is part of their nature, and it's to be judgmental with them. Plead on their behalf, but adjudicate by making and promoting informed, reasonable, and rational conclusions. So you'd be wasting your time if you were dealing with somebody who was in Sunday school.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, but it's got to be somebody looking. That fatherless child, they're fatherless, but, and they're looking for the truth, so we're presenting evidence, and we've all done this. We're also quarreling against all those traditions and those groups that they've been with in the past or they've heard or listened to in the past. I just wanted to say that before
absolutely.
Kirk jumps in there. And
okay. What do you think there, Captain Kirk?
Well, you pretty much said it all. Before I tell you those five things as a result of a conversation I had with Carol yesterday that kind of led me into it, those last two words, rib and almana, or so everything I had was to, you cannot get rid of anything but harass, contend, debate. I also wrote to be Larry-like, dispute something, to chide another.
This is an outrage.
Yeah, but fight on behalf of or fight for the rights of?
No, you can't get that.
No.
And there,
opposition to.
Right in the
hostile
face.
Opposition to.
This is an argument. Engage in an argument to dispute something.
Right, and you're not in an argument to support something. You're not arguing on behalf of it. You're not a proponent. You're an antagonist.
Right, and we have two reasons to know who he's talking about.
By the way, even the English word, if you say, I'm... I was ribbing you on that one.
I'm sorry?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's there, right. Isn't it?
I mean, it depends on you. Giving you a sharp jab there.
And that's kind of interesting because we've got that fight, the rib, the quarrel with, you know, attack them, make the arguments,
and then at the end, in the religious material,
in the case of a widow. So we're supposed to be out there attacking widows.
Yeah, that's really what you're thinking. So is it possible to translate almana, widow? Absolutely. Is it possible to translate it widow after rib? When God is asking you of your own volition?
No, he doesn't beat us on widows.
If you were an ISIS, I suppose so. If you were an ISIS, you could.
Yeah, I guess you could. So now the issue is, is there any way to get to change rib? Is there any other implication of rib other than attack with verbally attack, criticize? Absolutely not. But are there alternatives to almana based upon the root of the word?
Well, there is the widow. However, when you add in the huge amount of to bind, tying up the tongue, silence, your inability to speak, thus muted, or mute, forsaken, bound in grief, and bound in uncertainty, and I put in parentheses faith, which describes Christianity and most everything that all the religions are, the overwhelming evidence is you've got two things going. He's already told you who he's attacking for several verses prior to this. He didn't all of a sudden say, okay, now let's argue with widows. That would be so stupid. It's unbelievable.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And when you look at these words, they can't be anything but religion. We've already talked about Rab before and Christianity and Babylonian Christianity and all that mixture. So
if you were a serf in the Holy Roman Empire, or even any, you were a lord in the Holy Roman Empire, and you wanted to criticize the Roman Catholic Church, would you have that right?
No.
What would happen to you if you were a priest in the Roman Catholic Church and you decided, you know, and during the Holy Roman Empire, I'm going to criticize it?
You'd be killed, it'd be torture. You'd be tortured.
Right.
So that's what he's saying.
It's militaries, governments, and religions that silence people. And the most effective means to silence people happens to be religion. And since religion is based upon the concept of joining and binding, the very definition of the word, how do you miss religion?
I have no idea. I mean, if you're writing a religious document, doesn't that smack a lot of,
before we still go to the five things, doesn't that smack a lot of the way they took the 10 statements in stone and they said, in one verse he's saying, your parents condemn you for generations, and then he turns around and said, honor their father and mother. How do you get that if he's not talking about spiritual father and mother? I mean, it's the same
thing. Exactly. How do you can't. You have to pull it out of context.
Right.
You have to think of these things independently and not in context. But in the case of...
Well, I think you've said that before, is that one of the great things that they did was that they divided the word in verses and passages that could be parroted and taken out of context. And that's how you get there. It's the only way that works.
And particularly since this rib is entirely vocal. Rib does not mean fight. It doesn't mean strike. It doesn't mean wound. It doesn't mean kick. It doesn't mean bomb. It doesn't mean shoot. It doesn't mean stab. Rib is a spoken concept. It's to use logic and reason to present an argument against something. And so, you know, when you realize this is what he's asking us to do, then the foe needs to be something that is most effectively confronted with words, with a reasoned argument. Can you think of anything in the history of humanity that is more effectively assaulted with words than religion?
No.
No.
In fact, look at when you attack the Islamic State. The Islamic State grows. So With bombs, we make religion worse.
Yes.
The only argument that came with terrorism, the first thing I said is that if you want Islamic terrorism to go away, I present a national case against Muhammad and Islam.
Right.
Use words to expose and condemn the religion. And that's what he's saying here.
Well, that's what killed, what is it, Nazism? It's what killed
Ku Klux Klan.
Ku Klux Klan, racist stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, once
yeah.
you see what
people,
young
people
expose
to you,
I don't want to be that.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And that is the only effective foe against mm-hmm. religion, is words, evidence presented in a rational argument against it. That's, you know, there hasn't been a single person anywhere in the world that has read Questioning Paul from cover to cover who has remained a Christian. Not one. Not one.
Well,
use an argument.
That would take effort. Too. I mean, that's another thing. I've certainly sent plenty of copies of links to Questioning Paul out where I'm sure they didn't read them.
Oh,
you know,
no one is actually. I mean, there were two people that I heard of indirectly that read the first two or three pages. And said, you know, I'm not going to read anymore. But there is no one worldwide who has read Questioning Paul from beginning to end who has remained a Christian. Not one.
I heard, you know, I heard of that one preacher on television who, and I bet you it was your book, because the timing was just perfect for it. And I think we talked about this on the show one time, that he said to his audience, that's the guy that cries all the time, but the old Pentecostal. But
Swaggart.
Yeah.
Jimmy Swaggart.
Said, somebody sent me this great big old book about
Paul Longer.
And I just, I wouldn't even open it up and read it to anybody attacking Paul.
Yeah, it doesn't have any effect. I will agree. Questioning Paul has even the 1,200 pages of evidence and arguments against Paul. Doesn't have any effect on someone who won't open the book. That is
true. I about fell out of my chair when I heard that, when I listened to
it. Yeah, there you go.
Well, what happened to Larry, I had a conversation, Larry, with Carol, and she understands why, but she is tough. You know, she's been part of the family for about a year or so. And we were talking about, or she brought up once again, how is it that this is so honest, so straightforward, so true when you hear it, and so few people become part of the family. And I gave my usual answers, and some of them were fairly good. But then last night, as I was kind of going over the material for today's show that I thought we'd be on, I redid this verse, these last three or four verses, and I looked at it, and I kept saying, well, gosh, you know, here's y'all talking to us, or in that case, these particular people, but us, whomever reads this, and he says, this is what I want, what I desire of you. But it's also, it hit me like kind of a little ton of bricks there. It says, like, well, this is
just one little correction there. The imperative mood isn't saying, it's not first person volition, it's second person volition.
Okay.
It's this is what God is
wants of us.
Well, I don't know how you say it effectively, but He wants us to choose
this
of our own volition to do these things. So yeah, I guess you could not. I don't think there's a way to say that that I want you to choose to do this without having second person volition also convey first person volition, because he wouldn't have asked us
if he didn't want us being desirous.
Right. So I guess first person volition is implied, even though it's written in second person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So but what I got of it very quickly was, well, what are the characteristics of the people? And right here is five characteristics that he absolutely that if you do, if you're like this, then you will want what he wants. If you're not, and most of the people we talk to, and the scores and scores that you, Larry, talk to, and Yada talks to, they don't have this. They really, really
correct.
Don't. I mean, you
correct.
Have to have a desire for learning, and how many people have a desire for learning because they always want the short form? Or just give it to me straight, or, you know, they want to beat you up because you didn't quote their quote. You know, and they're not open to go find out why.
Yeah. And so as we talked this morning, that first point, the desire learning. If you don't desire learning, God doesn't want to have you be part of his family. Because,
what are you going to do? What are you going to do in heaven?
Even though heaven is a very big, eternity in the new universe is a very big place, eternity is a very long time. And the last thing we want is somebody who doesn't want to learn. Because I don't think there is any part of eternity that will not involve learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if learning is not fun for you,
right.
You'd hate eternity with God.
Yeah. You have to be.
But now, this is an interesting form, though. It's not just learning, which is the primary point you want to make, is God wants us to learn. It's
to
be productive.
Yes.
You know, this entitlement mentality of food stamps and welfare and all this stuff. No, he's saying, don't learn to be dependent. Learn to be effective. Be productive.
Well, I mean, if you think about it too, there's something. You know, we're in the Mashal where it talks about that last generation being they're like leeches, people screaming, saying there's never enough. You know, I did a post this week where we got into it with some guy that called me a false Torah teacher. He was a Pauline Christian. He was a Pauline Christian, no less.
Oh, a false Torah teacher. How could a Pauline Christian call you a false Torah teacher when Paul says that the Torah is for naught,
we didn't take it too serious.
You're false from their perspective.
Yeah, we didn't take them too serious, but my point was that on the we just made fun of him until he blocked us all, which was Matthew and D Powers, myself, and Robin and a few others. But the point being that I had put on the post that, you know, Yahweh isn't just talking about the useful idiots. I mean, he's talking to them, but he's also talking to the elite that use them. Because they're leeches, just as well.
Yeah. He's not talking to them. He's talking about them. And in this case, he's talking to us. When he's talking to us, he wants us to learn to be productive. I don't think it's possible to be productive, Larry, unless you've learned his Torah. Like, for example, you share notes and you engage with people and you're productive.
That's my productivity, sure.
Right. But the reason you're productive is you learn the material.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you don't learn
the
material, you can't be productive.
And you know this stuff.
Look, everybody that's in the room tonight and the people listening to the show, we're all here because we like to learn. That's pretty
straight up. We like to be productive, and there's no way, from God's point of view, he doesn't want us just to be, it's great to learn from the Torah and to listen to God and learn from him. That's a very good thing. But that's not the end of the sentence. It doesn't just say desire learning.
Right.
It says desire learning to be productive. To successfully engage. You know, I want you to learn to be successful, to engage effectively, to be productive. God chooses to work through people. And so the people he works through are productive.
You know, it's pretty huge, too, if you think about it.
It's a big deal.
To actually engage in eternal work. I mean, you know, from your desk.
Right.
It's pretty astounding, isn't it? I mean, really?
Oh, yeah.
It is.
Yeah, I think collectively, if we look at the group of all of us in terms of all during our part to convey Yahweh's teaching and to help people understand what it means, there's well over 1,000 people that have come to be part of the covenant. That's pretty effective work.
That's a huge deal.
A huge deal.
From Yahweh's perspective, if the work that we did, I want you to think about this. Say the work that we did, that we were doing, the production we were doing, I don't even look at it as work, just like you don't, just like Kirk doesn't, just like all of us.
I look at work as, I look at now at work from the Hebrew perspective, and from the Hebrew perspective, it means to engage and to act. And And so I look at it as work with Yah. That's a really cool position.
Yeah, it's not like some taxing event or something. That's why
yeah,
it's
but
taking
by the way,
money
you know,
Larry,
I actually enjoyed. I actually enjoyed
sure.
my business work. I've never
yes,
looked
I'm sure
work
you
at
did.
That thing. That's why I said one day, and I want you to finish your thought. I just want to speak about work is that when the quote unquote punishment for Adam for eating the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil was that he would have to work. And so my point was, it would have been inappropriate for God to punish either Adam or Chawa, because without access to the tree of knowledge of good and evil, they would have no basis for knowing right from wrong, and therefore God could not justly punish them. And then the next step is, okay, then what he said of them can't be a punishment, and indeed they're not. Work. I know there's a lot of people that don't like to work.
Well,
but I'm telling you, work
right.
is what builds character, what builds value, and what builds families. Work is an extraordinarily noble and beneficial and rewarding undertaking.
Yes,
and
it
so
is.
When he told Adam, you know, you're going to work for your nourishment. Okay, sounds good to me.
You know, if you're a lion out there on the Serengeti plain, you're working for
absolutely.
Your...
Absolutely. Yeah. And then there's another one where he told Chawa, you know, that when you give birth to children, it's going to be painful. Well, that's going to hurt. But can you imagine any short-term hurt more extraordinarily rewarding for a woman who becomes a mother? Well, almost any woman that's become a mother will say that's the most extraordinary experience of their life, the birth of their child. And so that's not a punishment either. You know, there wouldn't be a single woman out there that had more than one child if pain during childbirth was a punishment.
I know my former wife, Donna, loved giving birth. We delivered our last two at home, and she actually smiled while she gave birth because she enjoyed doing it so much. So it wasn't all that difficult for her.
What a wonderful, wonderful experience for most women. So,
I lost my train of thought there.
Yeah,
Craig,
I just
so
we enjoy
just,
we enjoy
ahead.
Work, and that work from our point of view is a very noble, enjoyable, beneficial, and rewarding enterprise, particularly when we're working with the creator of the universe.
Yeah, it's not a burden. Certainly, it's a lot of fun, and it's what's extraordinary about it. Let's say that 20 of us got together and worked for a year on some project and getting it out, and it got to the right two ears, and these two people actually became covenant, and Yahweh knew them for all eternity. Of course, from that point on, actually, he would have known them before that, but because of the production that we put out there, it would certainly our lives would have been worth it according to Yahweh. So that's who I care about in this thing. How does he view what we're doing, and what he views what we're doing as priceless? You know, so you know, if we put out stuff and it angers people that really don't want to listen, who cares?
Well, the last time I checked, we put out the Torah, and it pisses off several
Everybody.
Billion people. Yeah, several billion
yeah.
people.
Well, no, I mean, yeah. it even pisses off the people that claim to know the Torah because they want to run around in prayer shawls and they want to pray.
You cite the Sermon on the Mount to people, and you see how well you're received.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And these people claim to follow the baby Jesus, and supposedly the baby Jesus said it. You know, so they really got some problems.
So your view is that there's 5 points that God asked us to do.
Well, yeah, and
one to do five.
I had
to bring
out
what
it says
about
these things that I'm reading.
Okay. So
here in the second one, of course, was the word derash, which is seek. And then when I looked it up, you know, while I was thinking about all this, is you know, to look for and to search for answers. Is one of the meanings of it, and that has been our characteristic of everyone I've talked to that is a member of the family, is they really, really wanted to know, and they were receptive when they heard it, and they could tell when the misspot was, you know, that was fair, it is right, it does resolve the dispute, and it made sense to them. And so that would be a character seeing Yahweh indirectly or directly, whichever way. In this particular thing, indirectly, he's telling you this is the characteristics of those who come to find their way home.
Yeah, I think that exploring and the eternity is going to be just a huge part of eternity, is we'll be out exploring, which means to seek. You know, with the Star Trek thing, you know, seek new worlds. We're going to be out seeking a lot of it.
This is where Captain Kirk comes in.
Yeah, Captain Kirk. So, you know, one of the things I shared with Captain Kirk today when it was on Seek is that as I'm trying to make sense of Yeshaya 53, it's brilliant. It's one of the most important prophecies in all of Yeshaya, maybe the single most important prophecy. And in it towards the end, in Isaiah 53, there is, he did not open his mouth. And it says it twice. You know, it talks about all the, one of the things that was just amazing is that three times Yahweh says that his soul is going to be crushed, put under enormous pressure. And of course, you know, his soul was, his body certainly was not crushed on Pesach. So this is definitely in Sheol, and it really ties Sheol then into the black hole metaphor that we've come to realize the lightless.
Right, with all the pressure and all these
things. Yeah, so and it says twice that his soul is going to be crushed there, pulverized, diminished, and so under enormous pressure is what the word is. But then twice it says he won't open his mouth, and I'm saying, I don't get that. And the reason I said I started writing. I said, listen, I'm hoping somebody reads this and can explain it to me, because I don't get why God said once, much less twice, he didn't open his mouth. And I started writing it and said, you know, if you look at the start of Yeshaya 53 is talking about Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, because it ends by saying that he's going to see his family, he's going to see the light, and he's going to be able to endure forever with his offspring is part of this. So it's Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. He's the sacrificial lamb of Pesach. His soul suffers the great pressure of Matzah, and then he is reunited with his family.
Can I take a stab at not opening the mouth? Can I?
Okay.
Give it a shot. Because there was nobody to argue on behalf of there. These people that were putting him to death were not worth speaking to at that point. I mean, that's my guess.
Okay.
Obviously, you've got a better take
as a secondary possibility, but only in Sheol. Let me explain. So, I was first thing I said, Pesach. Pesach, he has this whole speech with his disciples, and he says, you know, when you celebrate Pesach, I want you to think of me. And here's the role I'm going to play in Pesach. So he's certainly opening his mouth there, right? And then he goes from Pesach, he goes to the Mount of Olives, and he's tracked down by the Sadducees and their armed goons, and he speaks to them. And speaks to his disciples at the time. So he's still talking. He then is brought before the Sanhedrin in a mock trial. They ask him questions, and his answers are just mock the living tar out of him. He just loves to make them sound like absolute buffoons. But he certainly spoke back to them. And so then on the fulfillment of Pesach, when he is put on the upright, even before that, as he's judged by Pontius Pilate, he speaks to Pontius Pilate, and then he's put on the upright pole, and up there on the upright pole, he specifically says that my God, why have you forsaken me? So he is citing Psalm 22, so that those who look up Psalm 22 will know what is happening here. So he's talked right through then. And then if we look at Psalm 22, and we look at Psalm 88, Mizmor 22 and 88, I began to think, you know, we are presented with Yosha's mindset, his extraordinary sense of separation and pain as he is in Sheol. But then it just dawned on me. When God said that, you know, he did not open his mouth, from the moment he spoke his last words, which were to cite Mizmor 22 to explain what he was doing there and what was going to happen next, he no longer had a mouth. God didn't say he didn't speak. God didn't say that he didn't communicate. All he said is he didn't open his mouth. He didn't have a mouth from that point on. The mouth that he had used for the past 3 years was incinerated that evening. And so from that point on, even on Bikkurim, when he meets his bio mother and he meets the fellows on the road to Emmaus, he's energy. He communicated the same way we will ultimately communicate.
And that's
you're not going to need a mouth. Yeah, you're not going to need a mouth. Now, the other thing I thought about is, all right, when he is in Sheol, because now this has been in conjunction with Sheol, so God is really making this clear. I've talked about the body being bludgeoned, and now I'm talking about the soul being under tremendous pressure, and he didn't open his mouth is in conjunction with the soul being under tremendous pressure. Souls don't have mouths. And then I thought, all right, when he is in the soul form and he is now down in the Sheol, he wouldn't have a defense. He would have no excuse. There is no. He doesn't have an argument when he is in Sheol. Why? Because he was laden with all of our
sin on the world. Yeah.
Absolutely. So he's guilty of sin. He is literally guilty of sin when he is down in Sheol. He doesn't have an argument. So I'm just going to man up. I'm going to take the punishment. I accepted all of this. I am therefore guilty of all of this. All of this sin has been associated with me. And so he didn't have an argument, didn't have a response then, and that's the time they're talking about. So he wasn't trying to defend himself in Sheol because there was no defense for it. He had willingly taken our sin. He was guilty of sin, and from that point on, he didn't have a mouth, and he doesn't have a mouth today. He had been the mouth of Yahweh, and at this point, he was a spiritual being. But that's just an example of seeking. But in this case, seek does not stand alone, Kirk. It's seek the means to justly resolve disputes.
Right. You're seeking the correct answer, the correct way, the correct path. And
God's only got one means to make
resolve
us like him. And we are all, from head to toe, dispute. And yet God sees us as perfect because he has a specific means to resolve our disputes, and those are through the Mikra.
All right.
What's the so we've got desire learning to be productive, seek to means to justly resolve disputes. What's the third?
Right, and then of course you wrote to live up a upright life, electing to walk. And so the third characteristic that we run across is people who, number one, seek to live that kind of life, and also want to walk with Yah. Now it's a two-parter because besides just that, plus I also threw in the mikrais as well as something we do together and to party with Yah, but also to be a guide. I think what did I? Let me find my little note here. So we had in order to be a guide or a signpost along the way, just as Dode was a signpost along the way, to for those who are oppressed by the human institutions is the way you did it, and that's
And there's almost no word that I have found that is really as interesting as Asher. Let me take it away. I currently translate Asher, and this is in a statement from Yahweh. He's speaking here to Yishak. And it's a statement that I've added to the end of chapter 11 because I want to prove that Yahweh not only shared his Torah with Abraham, but that Abraham was Torah observant. And it begins, "Choose of your own volition to dwell as a guest in this land. Then I will choose to be with you. And indeed, I will kneel down in love to bless you. To you, and for you to approach, and on behalf of your offspring, accordingly, I will give all of God's realms, plural, all of God's realms, and I will take a stand, establish, bring to fruition, and confirm, therefore, the sworn promise, Shabuah, the truthful witness based on 7, which to show the way," this is now Asher, "which to show the way to the benefits of the relationship, providing an upright and elevated state, a joyful attitude, and an encouraged mindset to those walking the correct way along the proper path to a prosperous life, and to make a connection to build an enduring association. All of that was Asher. I swore to Abraham, your father. Then it goes on to say, and I will grow and thrive with you alongside your offspring in conjunction with the highest and most illuminated heaven in the spiritual realm. And I will give to your offspring everything associated with the realm of God. And also all of the people from every race and place. They will be blessed and receive a favorable circumstance through your offspring. Then it concludes, this is because, focused on the relationship, Asher again, which means walking the correct way to an upright life, Abraham listened to the sound of my voice, and he continually observed and carefully considered my requirements, my terms and conditions, the mitzvah, and my prescribed ordinances, that which I clearly communicated and inscribed in writing of what you should do in life, in addition to my Torah. So he's saying specifically that Abraham observed the Torah. But anyway, Asher is a really powerful term. It is Asher that appears in this context. So it means not just to live an upright life, electing to walk the right way, serving as a guide. It's the one and only path that you can walk along, that whereby you're going to receive all of the benefits of the relationship.
Yeah. And the other side of the relationship was to, all the lexicons I looked up would also say, besides upright living or upright living and a guide, to direct others. So that's the relationship to them as well, is what you're doing it for.
So walking an upright life. Right. And we talked a little bit about, earlier today, about upright. Upright is the reason that God wants us to walk is because when you are walking, you are upright. You're shoulder to shoulder, eye to eye. You're not bowed down. So it's the antithesis of the religious idea. God wants us to walk with him, not bow down to him.
Yeah,
number two,
sure.
When you're walking, you're engaged. When you're walking, you're doing something. And when you're walking, you're going somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you're engaged with somebody. You're going somewhere. And you're shoulder to shoulder, side by side.
And you get to see new stuff.
Yeah, and you get to see new stuff along the way. So live an upright life.
So we have to
serve as a guide.
If we're not running too long, we got to this point. We've got three things that are mm-hmm. why there's only a few of us that seem to care about these things. Yeah, we're told.
Yeah, and by the way, this one also has something that God wants us to walk along that path, to serve as a guide for whom? Not
for the people without,
not the subjugators.
Yeah,
those who are oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those who are silent, who are abused.
I'm not as eloquent, obviously, but it's all of that indeed. Then I looked down, and there was a fourth one.
Yes.
And it was to be judgmental, and which is the contrary to everything
that's
held in high esteem in America today. Is
choosing,
once again, choosing on your own volition to plead on behalf of the fatherless child. Yeah.
Be judgmental. To make an argument. Now, to be judgmental here now is to process information and communicate it while exercising good judgment.
Yeah.
So he wants you to this is a be responsible. Don't blabber like everybody blabbers. Be exposed to the information. You've taken the time to learn it. Now help the fatherless child. Those seeking
information. Not much of a secret here. He's asking us to take information and share it in a succinct manner.
At the same time,
ridicule the idiots that don't want to hear it. Show people. One of the things that I do is I don't give them a break when they're complete idiots.
Right.
I make fun of them. I make fun
right.
of them.
That's what
Why
Rip
not?
Means. That's what Rip means.
Yeah.
That's the fifth one, right? Moral one.
Because I mean, we've already covered it. You covered this initially, but I mean, it certainly bears going over. The thing that's characteristic about us, and you can certainly say it, indeed, and Larry's more involved than the rest of us, and at least rest of most of us, because he's engaged in that constantly. But to quarrel, to take no prisoners, basically, and always fighting the congregation of the bound, as you wrote, the congregation of the bound, the dumb, and the forsaken. Alama, and we talked about that just a minute ago, all of that is exactly, you can't twist it any other way. He is talking about the religious, he's talking about the political, he's talking about people who oppress others, who hold them down, and he expects you to walk that walk, just like, if you're going to follow Yosha, then follow him.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that what he did?
He quarreled with him.
All
exactly.
The time.
He was doing exactly what this one is. That's why I keep on saying that we're told that there's death and destruction in this world and terror because people hate, and we need to learn not to hate. Every time, you know, a terrorist goes and does something stupid, somebody comes out and says, I don't hate them. We have to all resolve hate. And I say, no, we all need to hate terror. We need to hate terrorists. We need to hate the
people
religion that inspires them to be terrorists. That's what God is saying here. I want you to.
Oh, it's become so politically incorrect to hate anything. You know, we're supposed to. We're part of a collective. Let me tell you, when I see a podium that says strength through, you know, groupthink, I think that podium should be blown up. I mean, it's the antithesis of the Torah. There is no groupthink in the Torah. You know, we all eat our own peace alone.
You know, what's interesting is just came up with, okay, there's five things that God is asking us to do. There's actually six, because the next line actually belongs with the previous statement. You know how somebody riding on a horse came up with these positions reading a Latin Vulgate, and that's how they came up with. And it was on the Geneva Bible, the Breeches Bible, that they came up with the designation of Breeches Bible that God gave them Breeches and Adam and Chawa, according to them, Adam and Eve.
Oh, okay. Gave them what? Breeches.
Okay,
Breeches.
I don't even know what a breechy is.
Yeah, well, breeches, bridges. I guess it's early English for britches. So,
britches. Okay.
They give him britches.
Okay.
Yeah,
give him a long
one. Yeah, britches.
Okay.
So it's called the Britches Bible. Anyway, you know, that's how they came up. But my guess is that this next statement is the conclusion of the 6 points that God is making. He's communicating to humankind. He made 6 points, and the six is, please, not. Consider the urgency and consequence of this exhortation. Let's go for a walk. A lock. Let's choose to stroll through life together. Let's go on a voyage of discovery, traveling through place and time. Come. Let's proceed. This is the imperative active. So, again, this is our choice, because I continually want to engage in rational dialogue. Yaka. I want to reason together because I want to prove my case. And it's my desire to vindicate you. That was the Niffle. In the Niffle, the subject, God carries out and receives the action on the cohortative, which is first-person volition, says Yahweh. So I think that's a very significant possibility that really belonged with the previous five. It's six. So please, let's go for a walk. Because
think about that.
God
wants to reason together with you.
Dialogue.
Who has a God that wants to reason and walk around with you? That is so cool.
That is so cool. It's one of my favorite lines anywhere in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms is that particular line.
He says, please,
line.
You're polite about it.
Yeah, I know, please. Please.
He's like, come on, boy.
And the next one is in the imperative mood, which means it's your choice, but please. Please make the decision.
Please.
Let's go for a walk.
I want to
Why?
Continually engage
because
in rational dialogue with you.
I want to constantly engage in rational dialogue.
Wow. the creator of the universe.
From the creator of the universe, who's going to create a new universe with you and I as witnesses. And
we're going to make another one. We go check that one out.
Yeah, let's go for a walk together and talk rationally.
Yeah. That's one of the problems that I thought of initially on why so few, also the people who don't want these things, to bring them along into heaven. He hasn't punished them when they die. You know, most of them.
No, he just hasn't done
that. My mother's not being punished because she didn't know this.
No.
They just had her life, and some of it was hard, and some of it was good. But the thing is, when he turns over that much power, I mean, my gosh, you can't kill us.
No. So this is how I view eternity. This is, I viewed eternity is that we're all going to go off and explore. Walk means to travel, to journey through life. So, mm-hmm. Halak, we're going to go off and explore the universe and have rational dialogue, informed, interesting, logical, cause and consequence dialogue about what we have seen and witnessed together and what we're experiencing together. But what I figured that that's what God wants. But just to read it like this, come on, please. I want to go for a walk. I want to talk rationally.
One thing that when you look at honest translations, and you really mull over the things that Yahweh says and how He presents them,
uh-huh.
The one thing that gets lost immediately is religious overtones and No, there aren't. It's just so down to earth. The whole thing is just straightforward.
It's so down to earth.
Are there plenty of things you and I could figure out, or we could work to figure out, or we could go further with? Yeah, there is. But when somebody says to me, let's go for a walk, because I continually want to engage in a rational dialogue, says, that's real straightforward. I like this. I like being rational and talking with you in a rational way. That really is the antithesis again of religion, isn't it? Where there's no discourse of any kind there. There's just you on your knees and him commanding and you obeying
First, he used please, and he put this in the second person. But if he's a lord, he's going to say, "Come here, bow down. Come here and fear me. Come here and worship me." But no, it says please,
which is practically what Bibles will say in certain places.
Please, let's go for a walk. Halak, why? Because I want to engage in rational dialogue. And it's not simply because I want you to kiss my patootie, because I want you to tell me how wonderful I am, because I want you to sing songs of praise to me, because I want
sways
you to...
my ego.
Tell me, Lord, you're so wonderful.
You've got to be on FB for one day.
Yeah, he doesn't say, tell me how cool you think I am.
Yeah.
No, it's just, I want to go for a walk and I want to talk. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's as down to earth as it gets. That's
and by the way, that's the entire reason the universe. The earth exists for that reason. That's why the earth exists. That's why life was created, was for this one statement. You could boil everything down to this one statement. Yahweh says, please, let's go for a walk because I want to talk.
Why, I've said it before. He made Adam for the purposes of what? Association. Not for the purposes of being a religious instrument or whatever. It's just not there.
All right, then the rest of what is now Yashayah, Isaiah 1:18 says, even if your sins are as crimson, like snow, they shall be made white. Even if they are continuously as ruddy red, as dirty as Adam, like crimson, they will be made like wool. Just simple statement that God is saying, listen, okay, I just had told you, I want to go for a walk, I want to talk. Now, you might be saying, I think that maybe I'm not up for that. I got nothing to say. You're going to see right through me. I'm going to stumble. you know, you can do that.
I'm not good enough.
Thing. Yeah,
I've done bad.
Else, yeah, this is going to be really embarrassing. I'm uncomfortable. And God said, no, don't worry about it. Even if you're as messed up as Dode, even if you're as messed up as that Craig guy, and you have all of these issues, don't worry about it. I don't care how red you think you might be, I'm going to make you look like snow. I don't think if you're as dirty as, I told Adam he's going to go work in the ground. I don't care if you're as dirty as Adam. And by the way, Adam means dirt. I don't care. I'm going to make you like wool. You're going to be white.
Well, you got to admit, I mean, that's really down to earth. I mean, it's real down to earth because you have to admit, and I've said this, Taru is coming up, and I'm telling you, you know, this supernatural being walks into me, Yahusha, and he says to me, come on, let's go. I'm going to be in shock. I know it's coming, and I'm going to be in shock.
Yeah.
You understand? I mean, this
of course,
is
more,
well, my first response
to
the first response I have every time I translate something, it's going to be, wow.
I'm shopping, you know, and so imagine you're out there doing your exploring, you know, you know, who moves into the seat next to you? It's Yahweh, you know, and you're sitting there going, and he goes,
and
you know, check this out,
he's
Craig.
He's not saying, I want to go over here, and he's not saying, I want to talk to you about it. He's saying, hey, where are you going?
Yeah, I'm going to explore with you. We're going to go for a walk.
Yeah,
and so he says, hey, Craig, let's go over here. Or, hey, Kirk, let's go over there.
What do you want to do?
That's got to be intimidating. I don't care. It's intimidating. It's intimidating.
Don't be intimidated because just
I know what
you can be. You can be as dirty and as ugly as you doesn't matter because I'm going to make you perfect like snow.
Yeah, well, we're still intimidated, but that's real nice of him to say that. I mean, what a key sentence, a real break. I mean, real.
Well, we have time to learn to relax.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
We're going to be doing this for all eternity. You know, after a while, my guess is that we're going to feel a little less overwhelmed. But when Yahweh appeared, the first time he actually appeared and that Abraham could see him, what was the first words out of Yahweh's mouth?
He told him to get off his knees.
No, that was later.
Oh.
First word. He appears to Abraham. The first thing that he says to Abraham, first time he appears to him in a visual form. We're going off in our spaceship to some galaxy, and Yahweh says, I'm going to sit down. All right, if I should sit shotgun here, hey, where are we going? So the first time he does that, it's going to be just like the first time he physically met with Abraham. What were the first words out of his mouth?
I don't know.
I thought it was to come, you know, go to Jerusalem.
Ask the question.
Oh, no, that's the first time he talks to him. He's in Charan, but he doesn't see him. He just, and he asks for no feedback. The first time he's in Charan, he just says,
you're right. You're
leave here, walk away from this, but there's no appearance. The first time he appears to him, he is now in the Promised Land. And this time he appears visually to Abraham. First words out of his mouth is, don't be afraid. Don't be intimidated. Yeah. First thing.
Which falls right in line with this.
Which is exactly what you'd expect. So he's saying, don't worry. Don't be intimidated. I don't want to intimidate you. I want to be your bud. I'm willing to go right
to
you.
You're talking about the heat of the day there at the tent and all that. And then they ended up having a good laugh, right?
That was subsequent. The heat of the day and then going for the walk and having a good meal and a good laugh. And that was a subsequent meeting. The first meeting in the land, it's just straightforward. The first thing he says is don't be afraid. Don't be intimidated. Okay, yeah, I'm God, but don't let that happen.
And you're not.
But that aside,
let's go for a little walk.
Yeah, I'm the creator of the universe. Yeah, well, and obviously what happened by the last, that meeting was, you know, when he came up to him in the heat of the day, by then he had gotten to know Yahweh. He wasn't Abram anymore. He was Abraham, and he knew who Yahweh was, and he understood Yahweh's character, and he started laughing at Yahweh. Remember? I mean, that was
absolutely. Oh yeah. Well, that was the one where he
that's
told
the
him,
unequivocal.
You know, that was one of the latter ones where he said, "You're going to have a son, and it's going to be your wife." Yeah, I know she's 90, and you're 100.
And they both laughed
wife,
at him.
Yeah.
And Sarah laughed at him and said, "Miracles, huh, Yahweh?
Yeah.
Miracles."
Yeah. So Yahweh said, "All right, you know what you're going to name the kid? Laughter.
Yeah, but that's the unequivocal proof that what the family's about, what the Bereth covenant, the familial covenants about.
Yishak means two things. I previously I was just always translated it laughter, but it actually means two things. It means laugh and play.
Yeah.
Laugh and play.
I found that.
Well, boy, isn't that something? You know, isn't that wonderful? I think that's great, and that's even better. So, the point is that there is no question that that's where the covenant's at. You know, when I was a Christian, when you guys were Christians, what the hell did we think heaven was other than sitting around like idiots praising a religious idiot?
Right, singing songs of praise. Oh, God, what about how do you know? It's laugh and play. Don't be afraid. Laugh and play. Let's go for a walk. Let's have a good discussion. And
we're all fairly reasonable people. Didn't you think the exact opposite when you were a Christian? I did.
Of course.
Matter of fact, I couldn't even conceive. I didn't even want to think about it because it just seemed awful. Really?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, what's interesting is that when we're in this position here, what Yahweh constantly asks us to do is to listen to him. He never once asked us to yabber back at him. Never once. He's always asking us to listen to him. Now, when he says here in the eternity, please, let's go for a walk together because I want to engage in rational discourse. Now it's a discussion. He didn't say, let's go for a walk. I want you to listen to me. Well, let's go for a walk. Let's go explore together because I want to engage a dialogue with you.
Because it shows how important it is for us to listen right now so we can get to that stage where we can engage in a dialogue.
Well, he's got to make us more like him so it's not a baby talk conversation, too.
Well, that's why the first one was learn to be productive. And the second one was, seek, go. So, if you do enough of that, we're going
to
be empowered by him, enriched by him, enlightened by him. He's going to write a copy of his Torah teaching inside of us. We're going to be a lot better equipped to have a dialogue with him than we are now. Right now, we're equipped to listen. We'll be equipped to talk back and actually say something interesting. Right now, if I were to go off there and look at a solar system, I think beyond wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. I don't think that's
much.
Wow. I might make sure on my first trip I go up there with Roy just so that
say something smart, Roy.
You say something smart. Come on, represent us. I'm with him. He's going to be talking now. one of the things I actually think is that when we figure stuff out and we understand what he is saying, what these words are symbolic of, I think that he's has a good time with that. I think from his point of view, that is rational dialogue. So there's a lot of stuff that we've come to know that I think that he has found enjoyable. Okay, it says, if, whenever and so often as, you are genuinely willing, Abba, you voluntarily agree. Boy, this has been all volitional, hasn't it? Please, and everything here has been volitional. This is the in the juicy. So, if and so often as you are genuinely willing, voluntarily agree, and consistently provide your consent, and listen, the good and the fish and beneficial qualities. Now this is Tob. That means good.
Yeah, that's where
Tob is. Yeah, of the land of the realm, you shall actually and continually be nourished by a call. You know, I made a statement, Larry, and I know that I've got a lot of foes on this one, where I say that when God speaks of food, He's not talking about food. That when God speaks of food, food is always a symbol and a metaphor for that.
And you and me both.
Is either nourishing or poisonous. And so He's saying that here, if you are genuinely willing to listen to Him, then every beneficial quality of His land is going to nourish us. So he is saying right here what we've been saying. He's saying, you know, His words are nourishing. Man's words are not.
Yeah, in other words, I'm not eating. You know, I don't sit down and eat passages. At some point, you know, it's overwhelming. It's not that you're guessing. You're not guessing. It's like saying. When the word Lord is used, is it aimed ever at Yahweh? Of course not. It's always aimed at a man. You can see that. We don't have to guess about these things because, you know, when Yahweh tells us to have all these witnesses, the witnesses are all through the words. This buttresses this point and this buttresses that point.
Yeah.
And this is just another example of it.
Another example of God saying, yeah, you got that
good
one right.
Point.
Good take. You got that one right. That which is nourishing is my word. If you listen to my word, all of the good and beneficial qualities of the land will nourish you. That's what you should be consuming, is Yahweh's testimony.
And look again, too. There's a secondary point you just made, too. And, I mean, it's good to be made over and over because this is what we're always fighting. Look at all this free will. If you give your consent, if you choose, please, you know, I mean, this is not a God demanding obedience situation. And most
God's
people...
God's really comfortable to be around. That's the thing about Him. He the last thing... Listen, I love Yahweh. He is, in fact, when I talk to people about Him, I say, He's just a great dude. I mean, he's funny. He's fun to be around. He's super bright, great conversationalist. And he just, if you were to pick the perfect friend, that's who He is. He doesn't want you to put Him on a pedestal. He's quite content. He knows who He is. He knows all of the things that make Him special. But he doesn't need us to tell Him that. He wants us just to be straight with Him. He's straight with us. He wants us to be straight with Him.
And you know, there was a... and I just want to point out something here, and this is like, I'm going to use a person, but, you know, there's a famous song by Lynyrd Skynyrd. They're here from, you know, from Jacksonville, Florida, where they talked about Neil Young, okay? It's called Sweet Home Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you know, Muscle Shoals, they've got the Swampers. Well, the Swampers were a group of guys that just played backup for all these hit songs that we've all heard.
Right.
You don't even know
more there than
they were.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah, you think they were done in New York or L.A. or something like that. And one of them they did backup for like 12 years, they said it was a real good run, was Bob Seger.
Uh-huh.
And I had the guy that was doing this documentary I watched said, what kind of guy was he? He says, well, if there was anything I could say about Bob Seger, is that he was the one guy we worked with that didn't even have an ego.
Huh.
You know? And you know, I thought, you know, he did so many hits and became so big. He said he just worked at what he did, but he had no ego at all. That's what they said about Seger. And I could easily believe that because he wasn't some, you know, Justin Bieber character trying to be important somewhere. He would be the opposite, you know, type of
not
thing.
The opposite of Kanye West.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and so,
the opposite.
Yeah, and then you think, you know, and I'm not trying to put Bob Seger in some kind of a, you know, I shouldn't put
but that's Yahweh does not have an ego.
Yeah, I know.
Honestly, none.
Why would he? He's it. He's the pinnacle of life. Yeah.
But because he does not have an ego, he can be approached where we can reach out to him and have a relationship where we don't put him on a pedestal. We don't put him on a throne. We just talk to him like he's our friend, Dad. It's an extraordinary situation where God's goal is to get down to lift us up, because that way we're better company.
Can I ask you something? And I want to ask you, you know, at the height of Value America, I'm sure important people were trying to talk with you and meet with you, and journalists were trying to meet with you, and, you know, you had your, I don't know where you had your corporate offices, but in your corporate office, wasn't it hard to talk to people who were trying to suck up to you?
Oh, it's disgusting. Hated it.
And how about, wasn't it a nice break when, say, Yoel walked in your office and you guys were just talking about something or something like that?
Of course. Yeah. And talking about the old days and where we had come. And we used to, in fact, every time that Yoel and I got together, one of his famous lines, that he's was the brightest programmer I've ever met in my life. The guy's extraordinary.
Yeah, you said he's the brightest guy. When the internet first came out,
he was asked to go and make a presentation of his employer prior to the time. That, in fact, he was his employer at the time I actually met him. And they had just come up with the T1 line, which was a bundle of fiber lines. And so... somebody asked him, says, are you guys on the, do you have a T1, in and out of your, facility? And are you capable of processing the kind of information that, where you'd have a T1? And he says, oh, T1, T2, whatever it takes. There is no T2. So every time we would get together, I would always rib him and say, T1, T2, whatever it takes. It was just always real. Kidding, fun, it still is.
Kidding, well, yeah, see that, but,
down
but,
to earth.
But you could not have had a very real relationship with somebody who was trying to suck up to you all the time.
Oh, he would never suck up.
Of
ever.
Course not. He was. What, he had a handle on who he was.
That's what, one of the things. We were so close. Yeah, no. Anybody that was a flatterer or a sucker-upper, God, I didn't even want to be around. And now, if you compare that situation, what you're doing is an analog. You know, why in the world do you think God would want some crazy person like me to be sucking up to him? I mean,
no, he wouldn't. He absolutely wouldn't, but he would like a thoughtful person like you to walk with and talk with. And that's the point here. That's what people can't get. You know, everybody wants to have a real relationship because, you know, hey, guys, that's the wine of life.
It is.
Isn't it?
It is the best part of life.
Relationships. That's the wine of life.
And doing things together in a relationship. It's not just having a relationship where you just sit around all day. No, this relationship, we're going to go out and explore, and then we're going to go talk about it all the way. We're going to go.
Well, you grow together, you do things together, you laugh together, you cry together. I mean, this is what a relationship is made up of. Why would this surprise us? Everybody's out here thinking in terms of, you know, I don't know, physical things, monetary things. These, you know, those are worthless. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, Yahweh says things are just worthless.
Now, I will tell you that
for
a living and developing the wherewithal so that you're in a position where you can devote time to the things that are really more beneficial, be more productive. I'll say this. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So I don't think there's anything wrong with being productive and then using the freedom that production has.
No, of course not. I'm not suggesting that.
Yeah.
Not even a little. Worthless is a bunch of people who haven't been productive deciding where your production's going to go because they have a collective mindset and they have
right.
to, you know, take theirs for running it all, so they're robbing you. That isn't productive. That's completely anti-Torah. But production is Torah. Torah is production. I mean, it's,
yes,
it's really production.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, the last line, and we might as well just finish it, of this chapter, and then we'll move into chapter 7 in our next discussion. It says, God always gives you the alternative. Because he's asked you, please, and he's told you that I want you to make this decision. But he's going to give you the alternative. Yeah, here it is. But if you consistently refuse to agree and continue withhold your consent. Now, it's your consent, but if you continually withhold it and you are rebellious, by the sword you're going to be devoured. Because the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it. So here's
meaning
all the
he's not going to make himself a liar. He
no,
means what
no, no.
That's what
yeah.
he's just said right here. I can't
yeah.
be a liar. I can't
right.
bend down
but
for
I want
you
to
and
know
pick
that,
you up.
That yeah. you, there's only one means to life. There's only one means to genuine happiness. There's only one way to go off explore the universe with him. There's only one way out of this mess of a world that we're in. Only one way out. And that is with Yahweh. Otherwise, you're going to die by the sword. You're dying.
I've always, that's the only straight game in town. I've always thought, you know, all these people with options and they're going to do this to get away from it and they're going to do that. Everybody knows it's coming, by the way. Man, there's only one train out of town. It's called Teruah. There is
right.
no other train out of town. There is
right.
no other reality because this is real. And if God spoke it, it is so because he's not going to turn himself into a liar. Because he loves everybody. Because he doesn't love everyone. He doesn't even
yeah.
know everyone. And he doesn't want to. And I don't blame him.
When the Yeshaya 53, that prophecy, when it used Mishpat in the middle of it, it was explaining the intercession that the sacrificial lamb was making and what the soul was doing in Sheol and what happened on Pesach and the like. And we use mitzvah in the middle of it. The thing that it just struck me is this is the only way that God can resolve our limitations and still be truthful. If he said, I'm going to forgive you just because I feel like it, I'm going to forgive you just because I want to. I'm going to feel like it because, well, you made more prayers than somebody else. If he has any reason, which is capricious, he's no longer trustworthy. He's no longer reliable. He's no longer credible. So to have a backbone, to be just, to be truthful, to be dependable, he actually has to have some means to pay the price, to suffer the penalty that would be ours. That's the only way that he can justly resolve these disputes. So the mishpat via the mikre are absolutely essential. If it wasn't for that plan, then God would not be credible. Capricious forgiveness isn't a credible God.
Well, any God that's capricious would have to be a phony, and the fact of the matter, he couldn't be counted on anymore. And all religious deities are capricious, aren't they?
I mean, they are. Right. Well, think of the God of for Christianity.
Amen.
You could be an axe murderer, but if you pray the sinner's prayer at a Billy Graham rally, or you know the four spiritual laws, or whatever it might be, you come forward and you say, "All right, you know, come into my life, and you save me." That God's duty bound to save you. That would be capricious. There's no merit in that. There's nothing even remotely appropriate.
But not only no merit in it, I mean, he's making a liar of himself. So your
right.
God is a liar at that point.
Right.
And that
right.
is just bad news.
Right.
I mean, the mishpat, you know, for anybody new listening, and I know we get new listeners all the time, are your seven Moed Mikra, what they call the feasts or chag, called out assemblies, and those are the means that Yahweh said that he was going to, you know, he was going to use to save those of us who've decided to listen to him. So that's what it's all about. I mean, that's where it's at. It's
yeah.
the seven.
He laid out a plan. He laid out a plan, and he reinforced that plan in every possible way. He says, "Here's my Torah. It's full of guidance and instruction." The centerpiece of my Torah is my covenant. It has five terms and conditions and five benefits. And the means that I'm going to use to make that possible are the mikre. And so the mikre are going to be the means you walk to me and become perfect. It's going to be the means to deliver the benefits of the covenant. Here it is. I'm laying it all out for you. And then I not only talk the talk, I'm going to walk the walk. I'm going to do everything here that I promised. As a matter of fact, you know that passage that I read about Yahweh talking to Yishak about Abraham having observed the Torah? It used, rather than Yahweh saying to Yishak, hey, you know, I had some great conversations with your dad. We talked about everything under the sun. He didn't use either of the two Hebrew words that are common for we had a conversation. They are amar, we spoke, or dabar. We communicated using words.
Words.
Right. He didn't use either of those two words. He used shaba one time, which is
observe.
I made a binding promise, swore an oath based upon the concept of seven. And he used shabua the other time.
Promise of sevens.
Right, again, the promise of sevens. But he, you know, you would think that if you were God and you were talking to somebody, like Yishak, who knows who you are, you wouldn't have to say, listen, I made a binding promise. You would think that we would just assume, okay, God's word is binding. But think about how profound that is, that God takes the time to use those two words and said, this is what I told him, man. I made a sworn oath. I made a binding promise to your dad that this is what I was going to do. And I did it because your dad observed my Torah. He followed the Torah instructions, and I made a binding promise that if he did that, that all of these benefits would be yours. It's extraordinary, and yet the 2.4 billion Christians in this world want that same God to be a liar.
Mm-hmm.
That he does not honor those promises. That those promises can't save anybody.
We're right back to a capricious God when he can't be counted on because he's a liar. Yeah, I know. It's pretty tough. And, you know, you've said it before. They run around with their giant Bible, and even though it's not accurate, they have what they call an Old Testament. Even that's misnamed. And they don't apparently believe a word of it. Apparently.
Yeah, in fact, everything in the book is misnamed. There's nothing in the book that is accurate.
No, I know that.
Genesis is not Bar-Rashith. Exodus is sure as heck not names. Mm-hmm. Leviticus is not called out. Dabarim most certainly does not mean second law. Deuteronomy.
Yeah, something that means words. They claim that means second laws.
And then you have Yosha, and the next book, and they make it Joshua. And then they took the Yah out of every other name of every prophet. You know, it's no longer Yirmiyah or Yashayahu. And then on top of all of that, then you go to their... They put this whole collection under an Old Testament as if it was the will of a deceased deity. And you say, you're just out of your ever-loving mind. And then they have a New Testament when God says, I ain't going to have a new one. And it's completely different. And it's primarily authored by a guy that God said is the plague of death. That contradicts everything in God's testimony. And then you have books named after English kings, James.
Mm-hmm.
And Yahweh Conan, Yahweh's merciful becomes John.
King John, you know.
You have a book named
I know.
Luke.
And you're laying out such basic stuff. Then when you start reading it. I mean, when you start reading real translations, I've got notes that are nothing more than real translations compared to what's in a book named after
goodness.
The sun goddess Biblia. Yeah. And they're so pathetic. I think that the funniest one, honestly, I mean, we went through this a couple shows ago. We didn't get into what nonsense is in the Bible. You remember the one where he's telling them, what's it to me? You know, I've all the sacrifices of yours.
Oh, yeah.
When you start reading it in a Bible, it sounds, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's insane.
Almost making the opposite point.
Well, it's insane. It doesn't make any point.
Yeah, why are you coming in with these worthless offerings? I don't want any of this junk. You know, I've already fulfilled the things that are important. Your stuff is meaningless to me. In fact, it's irritating. But part of the problem, of course, is that, particularly with the Christian New Testament, it's so badly manipulated. I mean, it went through Hebrew to Greek, from Greek to Old Latin, from Old Latin to the Latin of Jerome to Old English to English to through all sorts of politically inspired renderings to this Textus Receptus that's not even remotely accurate, and there is nothing in it that is even 5% accurate when you look at the
you know
history.
What astounded me about the background on that? You know what really astounded me? Was how they wrote that it was not accurate to start
with. Of course.
And
we're
throwing an amalgamation of trash. This is their own words, you know.
Aramis, who was the anti-Catholic, Catholic, homophobic, homosexual, who abused his own students, who created the Textus Receptus, he made the same comments that as did Jerome, that we got such a train wreck here of errors that we need to start over. And it was, you know, Jerome's comments to the Pope, this is not, and there's as many variations as there are texts. And so if anybody wants to argue against this, they'll just pick whatever text they want, and we have no way of saying, well, ours is better than yours. He went on and listed, you know, the clowns that have tried to put in their own arguments and copyists that were buffoons and translators that were idiots. That was the condition of it. The Christians that hold up this book and they say this is the inerrant word of God, and it isn't 5% accurate.
Oh, I know. They've just been told that, of course. You know, it's beyond not accurate. It's purposely misleading.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, it's just intentional. It's just
right.
Awful.
It's awful.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah.
But even when you're dealing with your Torah, prophets, and Psalms, the problem with all that is just as, nearly as bad. I mean, there at least we have reasonably accurate resources that we could use. I mean, between the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Masoretic and removing the diacritical markings and then looking at the actual roots of the words, we can get to about 98-99% accuracy. And so, so there you have hope. But, of course, English Bibles aren't based on the Hebrew. They've never been based
on the Hebrew. No, they're based on the Septuagint and Latin Vulgate.
Right, yeah. The Septuagint at the time that the Latin Vulgate was created was such a mess that it had no credibility. So if you say the Septuagint, understand by the time that Jerome in the 4th century was writing his Vulgate, the Septuagint was an absolute cesspool.
Trash, too.
Yeah. And so you take this cesspool of ridiculous corruptions, and then you create a Latin version of it, and now you're two languages away. In fact, the two languages that are the least adept at communicating God's intent, what I think God would say is the two most wicked beasts, the two nations that were the most hostile to him in human history. And those are the two languages that you're filtering this cesspool through. It's hideous.
You end up. By the way, how Kirk? Maybe you could show us this in a pictorial. How do you do a unicorn? Because that's in there a number of times.
Oh, of course, King James has unicorns.
Have you ever come across that?
I could probably politically do something with it,
First King James, they had it wasn't Jesus at the time. He didn't become Jesus in the third edition. But they had their Hesus celebrating Easter. He says, come on, I want to celebrate Easter with you.
Yeah, the sun god religion of all time. Wow.
How is it, salespeople, how is it that you, knowing that you are corrupting everything, knowing that you're making it up, knowing that you've made up a god,
right,
and you're now asking people to listen to it, how do you pull that off consistency so long, even in one lifetime, much less centuries? That's staggering to me. I mean, it's like,
killing off great fun.
Now, I know you have an army, but, I mean, at some point you don't have an army to
You do have, because you have it in people's minds, because you've got, okay, you use that book, okay,
yeah.
If this is what you put in people's mind, you control the religious establishments where people were coming in and they were brainwashed, right, from the time they were very young, many of them, and these were, and plus you got to remember they controlled education, you know, for hundreds of years. I mean, if you were literate, you went to one of their schools, right? I mean, so that's how you do it. I mean, that's how it's.
Yeah.
I mean,
so
it's a very fascinating
society. At first, it was just imposed. It was you either go along or we're going to kill you. And if you look at the creation of Roman Catholicism, it was imposed by Theodosius, and Theodosius would entertain no rival. You either accepted it under his Nicene version, or you were dead. And that he then imposed the feudal system of lord and serfs, and so the lords accepted it because it was their source of empowerment, and the serfs had no choice; they were silenced. And that system terrorized, tortured, and then killed anyone who would dare speak against it for well over 1,000 years. And so, by 1,000 years of total submission. You know, it's at that point, people are not prone to say, well, you know, what they imposed was sheer rubbish, and my parents, their souls no longer exist because they bought into that that rubbish. I'm going to abandon it. No, the whole society, every aspect of it is.
Can I share this with you guys? This is my personal favorite of all time. This is just lovely, okay? And if you acknowledge, now this is out of Yashayahu, you know, so this is, or excuse me, Yeremiah, here it is. And if you acknowledge and accept and testify regarding the prophetic declaration of Yahweh, so likewise, this is what Yahweh affirms and promises. Since you're all saying this is the word of Yahweh's authorized, inspired, revealed testimony, and yet when I choose to reach out and actually send God unto you all for the purposes of serving as a witness communicating with you, you don't respect an answer nor affirm the witness to Yahweh's prophetic declaration. And for this reason, behold, then I will genuinely forget about you, give you no credit whatsoever. I'll actually reject and completely forsake all of you and the city, which as a result of a relationship I gave to you and your fathers from the Almighty's presence. Now, here, a drum roll I wish I had, because this is so bad. But since ye the burden of the Lord, therefore saith the Lord, because ye say this word, the burden of the Lord, I have sent unto you, saying, ye shall not say the burden of the Lord. Therefore, behold, I will utterly forget you and will forsake you in the city I gave you and your fathers and cast you out of my presence. I don't even know what the hell
The preamble of that is so warped.
It's insane.
What you were saying, it sounded like, well, this is our lives. This is the reason we choose to speak out and condemn lies and liars is God asked us to do that. And if we're not willing to stand up for him, why would we expect him to stand up for us?
Stand up for us. Absolutely.
Now,
I
want to tell you that not one of us, for even a moment, shares Yahweh's testimony, because we're concerned that if we don't share it, he won't stand up for us. No, but we don't do it for that reason. He's already committed to stand up for us. So we do it because when you're in a relationship with somebody you respect, you stand up for them. Just what you do.
Well, I mean, that was the most insane. I mean, we were talking about their Old Testament and what it's based on. How in the world did anybody? I got a note just called "Want to see accurate." This is all
right.
I do is just show them what they wrote, and then show them what really was written.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, all it says is it's little wonder Christians protest that they can't even understand their quote Old Testament of their Bibles because it's laughable. That's it.
Yeah, and of course,
that's all
if you
want
to make
said.
God out to be a fool, tell him that there were races of giants in the land. You know, so translate the phylum as giants, and not translate it, change it to giants, and make the your Bible seem like it's a myth because obviously there were no giants.
Yeah, well, yeah, and there's good, and you're going. What you're doing is you're working in consort with Baal at that point to make Yahweh's words look like an ass, because there are people like Tom Hendricks, who's now dead, who thought that this was God's words or the God's words. He didn't believe in a God because of those stupid words.
Right, of course. Yeah,
who would?
And it's hard to argue with that. That's why. I can't reason with an atheist, with an agnostic, when you point out that all of their arguments against God agrees with those arguments, and he's as opposed to those positions as the agnostic. So, you know, the real God is not religious. He's opposed to religion, and so all the religious arguments he's also opposed to.
Oh, yeah, the greatest witness to agnostics. And, you know, I mean, JB would be our witness to that fact, would be Yahweh's words. Because all those moronic verses like the one I just read, they don't really exist.
Well, Roy was an agnostic. You know, Roy was an agnostic, borderline atheist, too. A huge percentage of Yahweh's family.
But we'd have to say we were all agnostic to some point, I guess. But when he got to the point,
we're all unsatisfied with what we were being taught. I can tell
very
you
unsatisfied.
Right.
I knew there had to be a God. I was
an agnostic there for a while. Agnostic it just means that you don't know who God is. There may be a God, and probably is a God, but you just have no idea who he is.
Right.
I went from Christian to agnostic.
But I loved
Christianity just because it was so stupid.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, was it relativity that got to Roy? Is that what it was? Because I've never really spoken with Roy. I mean,
Roy began by reading Prophet of Doom. And then when he read Schroeder's book,
relativity.
So he said, yeah, that makes some sense. And then he found where I had, you know, taken the nugget there of time, relativity, and then put it in
the
context.
10 to the 12.
Because Schroeder he's a rabbinic with a Kabbalist. And so as he started reading Yah's testimony, as he actually wrote it and listened to Yah's approach to creation, he was just instantly hooked. He says, this is real. I've been studying biology. I've been studying mathematics. And I have been studying medicine my life and from the perspective of those sciences and of reason. This answers those questions. It's the first real, credible explanation of
that's what got him. That's what got him, and that's what got me too. Once I got into the Or chapter of Yada Yada, and I read, you know, this is how 15 billion years equates to 6 days.
Yeah.
You know. I went, you know, of course, I was floored. I told you, I think I've mentioned before, for several days, I couldn't sleep at night. I kept thinking about this. This is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome.
You know, but I knew I had a lot to learn. I mean, but still.
That's such a cathartic moment for all of us, because at that point, you are absolutely compelled to get off the fence.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is.
Well, you should
that
be.
Is, that was one of my very first wows.
Number of people that are brain dead, you know.
Yeah, it was one of my very first wows. Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. First of so many.
First of
impressive.
Many.
Well, I was blown away. I was blown away. I mean, I was out of that. I was blown
away.
Yeah,
speechless. You didn't know if you should just take a deep breath and be amazed. You didn't know if you should be embarrassed that you did give God credit previously. You didn't know if you should go out and shout at all the new earth decapoops that have the earth being 6,000 years old and that God just created it with dinosaurs to trick people. All of us.
Well, you know what? I got into it with a girl that was claimed to be an atheist and an agnostic, and I said, well, do you want to debate this? I said, how do you want to? She wanted to debate it. She said on a scientific level, and so of course I presented the 6 days of creation and lined it up with relativity. And do you know what she said in this debate?
No.
By the time we got done, she said, there's just too much science here. This doesn't interest me. I said, what?
Funny. She wanted to have a scientific presentation.
Yes.
Right. And then the answer was, there's too much science here.
Too much science. Andre, you confuse me with the facts.
This is just a reality. I mean, but this is what's happening out here in the world, you know. I mean,
Why is it that someone, I mean, we have consciousness, and we know when we're screwing up, and we know if we were telling a lie and presenting a falsehood or if we were playing that game with politics and so forth, and if you knew, you know. Why don't these mega preachers ever come out and say, look, not even one of them I can find that came out and said, no, this is a phony, crappy nothingness, and we lied to make the money.
Yeah. And that's the bottom line.
Shouldn't there be
a really crappy lie
somewhere in your conscious?
Yeah. I had a friend that called me the other day, and his girlfriend is trying to sell him on speaking in tongues and talking to God's prophets, and that if he does that, then he's going to become rich and all of his problems are going to go away.
That's brilliant.
So he told me that yesterday. I said, I've got some suggestions for you. Why don't you just tell her to go away? I don't ever want to hear this again. You know, it's not like you're married to her. She's not the mother of your children. Just tell her to go away.
I had a business partner who he was actually the preacher at the largest Church of Christ in Houston, Texas. This was way back in the early 90s, and he had something on the order of 15,000 members. He said there were 12 elders, six of which were lawyers. And he said he felt just like a guy in between two rocks, you know, where they were just scrubbing his head. You know, I mean, he did this, because they were paying him back then like $150,000 a year, plus taking care of his expenses and this and that. And I said, Carrie, you know, and Carrie ended up becoming an actor, but he put me in a couple of training films and I got paid for them and stuff like that. But I played a bad guy in an FBI film where I killed this marshal and escaped and all this. We did insurance together for about 3 or 4 years, and I said, Carrie, I said, how did you deal with all that? And he said, to me, it was just garbage in, garbage out. And what he told me is he went out and he hired the woman with the finest ass in Houston, Texas, to be his secretary, and they played around with each other all day, and that's what he really did. That was it. And he was there 15 years, so he quit. He quit. He just quit. He quit because he said that they were doing some outreach program out in Ireland, and there was this guy they were funding, not very much, $500 a month or $1,000 a month or whatever it was, and he said he went to visit him, and the guy in four 5, 6 years and only gotten 4 members for his little Church of Christ over there. He said, but the guy wore the same shirt every day and there was a coffee stain on it. He said he really liked the guy. And when he came back, the elders decided that they wanted to get rid of this guy because he wasn't building the church, you know, fast enough. And Perry said, look, they've been hundreds of years of Catholicism over there. This is, you know, the fact he's got 4 people is a big deal. And yeah. So they quit funding the guy, and Kerry just, I mean, he said enough was enough. That's when he walked out of it. I mean, he just, you know, he said he didn't believe any of it anyway, so he just walked out. Yeah.
That's the first part, right?
Yeah, it's all fake. Well, fellas, it's been enjoyable tonight. We finished chapter 6. We'll start chapter 7 next week, and we've got all the way through chapter 11, so we've got a lot of material to cover.
Okay. Shabbat shalom to both of you.
Been my pleasure, you guys.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Good night.
Hi, y'all.
Bye-bye.